Episode 143 of Board Games with Variant Hex is all about what we played in March 2024. I'm Kelly, and in this episode, Aaron and I talk about the long list of games that we played, including what we liked and didn't like, and what we each chose for Game of the Month. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to myself and Aaron talking about our Board Game of the Month for March 2024.
We made it. We were aware of the odds.
I don't know that what we need every month is a pun specifically about the month name. I think there could be other, like, interesting facts, other things that you say or even teasing further parts of the episode.
That was more of a cultural reference.
I just thought we'd have a little mini meeting about it here at the beginning of the Board Game of the Month episode for March 2024.
So Shakespeare reference for every episode I got. That's not what you said.
Honestly, yeah, that would be fine.
That's what I did this time, is it?
But next month, it probably won't be one about April.
Oh, a Shakespeare reference that's not about April.
Yeah. So if it was a Shakespeare reference every time, that somehow worked its way into what we're going to talk about.
But I shouldn't, like,
about.
Bring it back to April. Like, a month by any other name would, you know, like, whatever.
That's precisely what I'm asking you not to do.
Got it.
Excellent. This was a big month for gaming. January and February,
not so much.
Not so much. We had a lot going on. We had big plans, start of the year. We had things we were getting done. So in January, we both went on trips, and that really cut our month in half. In February, we had some house projects planned, executed beautifully.
Lovely.
Very happy with the results. And also, I think on top of that, really got it very close to completion. Like, we had time.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't like one of the things was like, oh, well, we started that project 7 months ago and now we can finish it. We really knocked it out in the 5 days that
it
we
It wasn't
set
like,
aside.
Well, that one wall isn't painted. But aside from that, everything's good. Yeah. Like, down to a pretty good detail level, things got done. So that was exciting. Here in March, we went to two board game conventions, also played games on some weeknights, also played games most weekends, didn't really have a full weekend, I don't think, without any games played.
Right.
And, I mean, slightly longer month. So,
I had 56 plays, which is a lot for me. You sometimes will get that high.
56 on how many games did you have? How many games
39,
you have?
39.
I had 83 plays on 55 games.
Oh, you almost had more unique games than I had total plays.
I did 20 plays on 11 games in BGA. So I know yours has a little bit of BGA in it. So without BGA, it would be 63 plays on 44 games.
That's for physical copy. My H index also very high this month. 3 for me. Usually it's just 1.
I don't have it up. I don't have it handy. It might be 4, but it's probably
H index for those. I like to reference it, but then I never explain it. It's the it's the number of games you've, like, it's the number where you've played that many games that many times. So if your age index is 4, you've played at least 4 different games 4 times.
Yes, yes. Kind of goes for density of plays. I don't know why it's called H index.
So Aaron's will be in here, and this is the
I don't know.
List
I don't know either.
I thought of making up a thing, but it seems to not go well.
Pronounced
Thank
to the best
you.
Of my
I feel
ability.
Like
I
feel
and I'm
hurt.
Saying that because the first one is
Ohio.
This is also, these numbers that we just gave are technically a bit low on plays.
So you would hear it, and in my opinion,
one low
I have no idea
on,
how to spell it.
Well, no, just a
baseball
bit
highlights
plays,
2045, Bosa, Botnik, Burn the Witch, we played, Coffee Rush, Dive,
I think
Dracula vs. Van Helsing,
each
Dungeon Drop,
plays.
Expressions, Fancy Feathers, Flip Town, Fog of Love, Forest Shuffle, The Great Heartland Hauling Company, Greed, Happy Salmon, Heat Pedal to the Metal, High Score, Honey Buzz, Ito, Jekyll vs. Hyde, Carvey, Gnar, Lacuna, Love Letter Batman, Love Letter Legend of the Five Rings, Marrakesh, Marrying Mr. Darcy, Megalan, Mlim Space Agency, New York Zoo, Old West Impresario, Paint the Roses, Pocket Cats, Rift Forest, Roll in One, Roll and Bump, Sea Salt and Paper, Shake That City, Shipwreck Arcana, Scaventer, Soulless Lost, Stone Spine Architects, Streets, Subatomic and Atom Building Game, Tequila, Tesla versus Edison War of Currents, That's Life, Trio, Unpublished Prototype,
Villagers, Whistle Mountain, Whistle Stop, World's Fair 1893.
Do you need me to bring you some water?
Oh, it's a long one. 55 games is a long one. It was almost as long as the call list. That episode should be already out before this one. I think that was 65.
Oh,
and wow. Adam went through and he was reading every game. It took us 4 minutes. He read every game title. And then I had a shorthand, like one of four or one of five different things that I said for why we got rid of it. The most common was just like meh, which meant there wasn't actually anything wrong with it. It's just that you can only keep so many games.
Right.
And maybe the two player wasn't good. Maybe one of us didn't like it that much, you know, whatever. Anyways, the games that were, added to the collection. Actually, first, what was played the most? Ito had like six plays, maybe.
Right. I think we played that a lot at Dice Tower West, right?
We did. That is the only place we played it. Yeah. Mlem Space Agency. I played that one with Adam. So that's personally me. I think I had a couple extra.
I still had a couple plays of Mlem.
You had two. I think I had three.
I have three plays of Mlem locked in here.
Well, then I must have four.
Well, you must.
Because Adam and I played. Dracula versus Helsing, the unpublished prototype, technically has the most plays. Roland One, Solus Lost, Trio, Forest Shuffle, Botnik, Gnar, Sea Salt and Paper, Shake That City, Shipwreck Arcana. Those were all games I played more than once.
Right, yeah.
Which is also a longer list. A lot of those are BGA plays, but, you know, so be it. And then what games were added to the collection? Tesla versus Edison, War of Currents, that's one game. Now Boarding and Greed were all used game pickups from Half Price Books. Megaland, Japanese the Game, and Expressions were all from Dice Tower West. Gnar, I think I just regular bought that at the game store.
Yeah, because we liked it at Dice Tower West and we saw it and we bought it.
Yeah. Stonespine Architects came from Kickstarter. New York Zoo, Lacuna, and Boza, Starship Captains, and Abandon All Artichokes all came from Barnes & Noble. Couple of those. Starship Captains was only $20. Abandon All Artichokes was only $5. So that's like their clearance shelf. It's different from Sword of Store. You have to go all the time to see it, and it's usually some not that exciting party game that's on the clearance shelf, but occasionally it's not. So those were all like super cheap pickups, and then we used points to get gift cards to just go buy board games. So we actually also got Planet Unknown. Well, I think just that one was the last one that we got with Barnes & Noble gift cards. It is, again, store by store, it's different. One of the stores here has a bigger selection than the others, but there's some pretty decent games there. And there are games there that, like, a good number of games there that I just already own that I bought other places. And I was like, I wouldn't have expected this to be at Barnes & Noble.
Penny Black, for example.
Yeah, that one was one at Target. So those Buffalo games I thought were only at Target, but I think I must be wrong about that. Or maybe previous ones were Target exclusive.
So we got rid of like 80 games and bought like 62.
Now, some of those came in and out. Greed, already gone, was already in the Hoosier Con silent auction, as was Old West Impresario, I think, was in their silent auction. Our copy of Creature Comforts, which, quality auction item, if I do say so myself, it was sold once. It was the Kickstarter Deluxe Edition. Like, blessings upon whoever did manage to get that one. I'm sure they got a great deal on it, and that the Con was able to do some good fundraising with it. So yes, this is why I'm saying every year we'll just, I think as I select games to get rid of, I'm just going to be boxing them up, and then
we'll take them
come March. Well, it's actually going to be April because it's going to be on Easter weekend again. Come April.
All right, it'll move.
It'll move, yeah, because that's, they're working on it.
Lunar calendar.
Yeah. That is what the local con will be observing, the lunar calendar. I'm just going to box them up and basically store them. And then Easter weekend, just give them all. Because they didn't even ask me to like have a list of what I was giving or anything. I just was able to box them up and give them. And I mean,
there were some in the library like the next day.
Library the next day and then the auction the next day. Every day they had a different, I didn't say this on that episode, which we've already recorded, and I think it's coming out before this one. They have a different auction items every day.
Yeah.
Which was nice. A great way to like check back in instead of trying to put so much in an auction and get people to like go crazy bidding. I think it was better for there to be turnover like that. And that was well done. for the games that were sold, we're already kind of talking about it, but listen to the Cull episode, which is probably a few back. You can hear all about what we got rid of. And it might come out of, I don't know if I'll keep doing it in Game of the Month or if I'll just do that yearly episode. We'll see. Where and with who did we play games? So often we're like, oh yeah, we were at home
and in the coffee shop
and we were playing with one another. But now we were in different cities. We were at different conventions. I played with Adam online. We played with Jason as well.
Oh yeah, Jason came over.
So other people, all of our con friends, were able to play games with them. So it was like the strongest month year to date.
It didn't have a lot of competition, but it would have been the strongest month year to date in a lot of years.
I would have to go back and look to see, like, I have never done that ranking. Like, what is our strongest month of gaming? I mean,
it's got to be August for Gen Con, but...
I don't know, though, because we don't
play a lot at Gen Con.
We don't necessarily play a ton. But
we also, like, come home and then play all the games we just bought.
Yeah. Yeah, for the rest of August. So you're saying it's more likely August because of everything new that came in. Yeah. I have not done month by month what is the ranking. That might be some future episode. We'll have to see. We've been doing this for a couple years now, so it wouldn't be the hardest thing to find out. So that's our review of the month. That's like our summary, recap, what happened. So now we're going to move on to our back to the table, our Cull action, and our game of the month. Do you already have your year ready for your back to the table?
Yeah, sure am.
Okay, tell me.
I think I'm going to go with my back to the table. I like to pick games that I want to play with other people.
Okay.
And so I'm going to...
What is that?
Well, I mean, I think like there's...
You don't play solo games.
No. But count. Playing games with you...
I don't count.
No, I do it all the time. So I'm back to the game means I want to play it with people who might not be gamers. You're just in it with a bigger group is what I'm saying.
So your back to the table is never things you want to play with me again?
Well, I think
I'm making it awkward.
The game of the month is games I want to play with you. Like good games that I want to enjoy with you is game of the month.
So you've made up your own definitions and this is what they are.
I want to play Mlem more.
Okay.
It's a good game. I like pressure luck games. It's a really good pressure luck game. There's like a shared risk component of it.
Because you are thematically. You're space cats.
Oh.
And you're
adventure. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's...
But fun.
It's fun. Thematically, you're space cats, and everybody has a duplicate copy of this team of adventuring space cats, each of them with their own kind of little special ability. You pick which one of your space cats are going to go on the mission, and then in turn order, the only thing that's really you're in charge of on your turn, because you're participating in everyone's turn,
right,
which is part of what keeps it interesting. Same way that like things like Space. Someone else is rolling, but you are having a decision to make. Right. Or you have something to think about. You all get in the ship. When it's your turn, you're the one rolling the dice. So you're the one pushing the luck and deciding when that push your luck train stops. So,
well, I mean, everyone else can decide to get off the train, but you're deciding the mechanics
but
of it.
But you still decide when you're not going to roll again.
Oh, yeah, and then you pass the dice.
Right. And you're in the first seat. So when you decide that you don't want to roll again... there are all these stops along the way because there's basically just this long track of the spaceship going out into space. And as you're rolling, you're trying to hit these certain dice values so that you can keep adventuring. And even when you successfully hit a dice value, that die comes out of your pool.
Unless it's fire.
Unless it's the comet rocket fire thing. And also if it's your last one, and then you can just keep pushing your luck with exactly one die trying to get, I mean, you have more than one value to choose from or one that you're aiming for, but you know, statistics. So you can try to keep pushing your luck just with that one die with as long as you want to go. All these different stops have increasing number of points. You pick a stop to get off of and your different cats, because you're picking a different cat.
Yeah,
to go in.
Powers.
So each have different powers. So some of them get double points on moon. Some get double points on planets.
Some of them can steal a dice if they leave early.
Some of them can take a dice if they leave early. So like not who anyone would invite. Some of them have inherently a one. So if you need a one and don't roll a one, you can use the one from that one. So it's this push your luck thing. You're all in the spaceship together. I think you are more excited to encourage someone else on their turn because you're in there. So when they're rolling awesome.
Oh, you want them to roll well,
like
yeah.
Everyone's getting excited about what that might mean. And that still also means they're rolling awesome. You might be like, that's great for you and you adventuring cats. I'm going to get off right here and take these points.
Yeah.
So I think that it manages to be a push your luck that stays really engaging. And there are also like these bonus points you can get for achieving certain goals.
Yeah.
And those are shared goals. So the first person to like put four cats on four different moons or something like that gets five extra points.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I think it's a really well done push your luck game, and the theme is silly enough to be fun.
It's weirdly premium.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think that that's fine, because why not have premium push your luck games? But also, if it had just been, it has a neoprene mat.
Yeah.
In the actual like physical version, you can play it on Board Game Arena. I think if the components were cheaper and the game was like $25.
Yeah.
And it was just less of a deluxe thing, I don't think it'd be any less fun.
Yeah. And if the title had one more vowel, that would be also good.
One more vowel.
Yeah.
Instead of Malim. It could, I mean, I don't know why they couldn't have called it Meow Space Agency, but Malim is meant to be, Blim is meant to be another like cat noise.
Yeah. I'm not for it.
Yeah. So that's,
but back to the table for sure.
Back to the table for sure. I've been calling it Space Cats.
Okay. Nice.
Because that is less of a, you say the title and people are like, what? So I've just been calling it Space Cats. My game for Back to the Table, I'm having a hard time between Back to the Table and Game of the Month. And it's really because there's so much competition for Game of the Month. We just played more games and there were a good amount of them that I liked.
Mean, you usually break the rules that I like to have. As we've noted, I'm making my own rules here.
Yes.
That you should only have one game in each category. You typically don't even follow that rule. So
that's true. I usually have kind of a leader and an honorable mention, and sometimes they're tied. So I'm going to say, this time I will have a leader and an honorable mention. They will not be tied. I will say Heat is the one that I want to play more.
Yeah.
We played one map, one lap of this racing game. And I think, I don't know how the rule book technically suggests you do it.
It says a number of laps. You select a number of laps.
Yeah. And then there's all those different tracks to play. The tracks differ in that when you're playing cards in Heat, you have your own little deck. You are racing this car. Your cards are the speed your card's going. And the big thing that's different about the tracks would be the straights and the turns, and how fast you can go in those. So you'll be managing your deck a little differently based on what the different tracks are.
I like in the mechanic, because, you know, we did just do one lap, but I think in a lot of those games, like, when you get to the end of a lap, a lot of times, like, you're running out of cards, you're running out of resources, and it just feels like
it's over.
This game has, like, a self-refreshing deck mechanism where, like, you know, if you did
you can get a good refresh or a bad refresh, kind of.
You could do, like, a six lap race, and it would be hard to predict where you were going to feel the squeeze. Like, it's not always going to come at the same point of the track.
Right.
It's,
and for each different racer that might be playing. Yeah. Downforce just has the one lap all the time.
Yeah.
Keeps it exciting, but then, you know, sometimes someone gets far enough away and it's like, it's inevitable. Formula D also has multi-lap, but there's so much more going on in Formula D.
But this game doesn't feel light.
No, it doesn't feel... I don't know.
I don't feel like it's uber light. I feel like it's
there's
for
a lot
sure
of
medium
choices medium. On your, like, there's a lot of different things that can happen on your turn, which at first feels not that light. I think after you play it a couple times, it does lighten up. It's just that getting familiar with the choices.
I think we didn't play risky enough, and I think if you were more risky than you could.
I mean, I was risking more than you were.
Well,
I think you, as your cards came up, I don't think that risk presented itself to you because you didn't need to.
I got really good draw.
My engine was hot. That's what I'll say. So yeah, it has cards like Flamme Rouge. You have a simplicity of the gameplay reminds you of Downforce, but there's no gambling. There's no betting. And then it is kind of like Formula D in that you can do these bigger, different races, but it never gets as complex as that. I'd like to try it more. It's on Board Game Arena. That's probably how I'm going to try it more. I bet I will buy it, but I'm just feeling a bit cheap for it right now. The honorable mention, which we played on Board Game Arena, was Dracula versus Van Helsing.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
It's just, it's interesting. I think that it's not that different than, I mean, it is, but in some ways it's not that different than Hanami Koji. Because you are kind of doing a battle line thing.
Yeah, but I think it's different enough.
It's different enough because instead of a battle line, you have this map and you're trying to accomplish different things on that map. One person is trying to turn all the people in each section because you have four tokens that are villagers in each section of the map. And you have four tokens that are villagers in each of the five sections of the map. You have a card aligned to each of the five sections of the map that is your hand, and you're trying to win that territory.
Yeah, I almost picked this as my back to the table. As I recall, we played, you beat me. At the end, I think I understood how the game was played and wanted to play again, and you were like, nah, I don't want to play again.
No, I think we played it more than once.
Maybe you beat me twice, and I wanted to play it a thrice.
We will have to see who beat...
I don't think I won that game.
Who? Yeah, I think we did play it more than once. And I remember, so Dracula's trying to turn everybody in one. And what's the... Oh, the other person is trying to... It's not. They're not actually doing something on the map. They're trying to kill Dracula.
Yeah.
So Van Helsing is trying to kill Dracula, who has a certain number of health points.
Right.
So they do get to damage Dracula every time they win one of the zones. So then it doesn't matter where they win, so to speak. They're going to hurt Dracula, but they have more damage they need to inflict. Dracula really only needs to do 4 damage, but he has to do them in the same area. So usually he ends up doing more damage than that. So I liked that it was, again, it is still 2-player only. You are still kind of doing this battle line head-to-head card thing, but it's just, for me, the difference of what you're trying to achieve makes it a little more interesting. And I already played it a few different times.
Yeah, I mean, we split and I wanted to play a rubber match. That's what the evidence says.
That's okay. That sounds right. That sounds right.
My memory's rubbish.
Yeah, that sounds right. So yeah, I think that's my back to the table. And part of that is just wanting to give it a shout out that I did get it back to the table multiple times and enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah. What do you have for collection?
Oh, the collection. I mean, I think I picked Marrying Mr. Darcy for the Dice Tower collection. So I'm not gonna pick it again, but it was very rubbish. I did not like it at all.
Yeah, and you didn't like Flip Town at
No, but I'm not yeah, I already picked that for Hoosier Con. I'm gonna pick Whistle
Mountain.
Which one do we own?
We own Whistle Stop.
I'm gonna pick Whistle Mountain because it's not as good as Whistle Stop.
Okay. That seems reasonable. We don't, you know, for collection, it's like, what game would you get rid of? And I think it's the same as, what game would you not play again? That one isn't actually one that we own. And the between the two of them, you do kind of get the feeling that there is a similarity there, but it's not so similar that they actually need to have anything to do with one another.
Yeah, and I think my sense was that the first one was, like, enjoyable. The second one had a lot of the same art and not the same mechanics.
Like
the style was all the same.
Maybe.
But I think it was like the same type of game overall, but just maybe not. It just didn't feel as fun. And
some of that might have been at 2-player. It
right.
wasn't quite as good. Right. You're kind of in Whistle Stop. You're connecting these like roads or something across, or I guess they're trains probably. You're going across the map in one direction. This you're building up and you're kind of building up and covering, and then there's these different transportation types. I think it's like blimps and things like that.
Right.
That you're then adding. And I think it could be the way that between the two of us we built that section up. Like maybe that also made it not as exciting of a play.
Right.
Yeah, it also might just not scale down as well to 2-player. But I agree. It's not, we played it and I anticipated liking it and then thought, you know, I'll play it just to make sure I like it before I add to the collection. And then I was like, oh no, I'm not going to add this to my board game library.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, I picked it for the cool.
Yeah. For games that might not stay are the ones that already didn't stay.
Oh, so Greed.
So Greed and Old West Impresario are already gone. For Greed, I just played it two-handed. We didn't even really legitimately play it. I got it used. It was Donald X. Vaccarino. I don't remember how you say his last name, but he's the guy who did Dominion. So I just saw his name on another box and I was like, well, let's see what that's about. I did not care for it.
No.
It was fine. Like, it wasn't inherently bad. And again, this is me playing two-handed to kind of learn the game, see what I thought, see if I wanted to actually play it with you.
Right.
And I played through it and I was like, that's all right. It didn't have enough where I felt like, yeah, let's keep this a while. Let's give it a few plays. I was like, it was interesting to try it. We're going to let that one go. I think for Old West Impresario, I did the same thing. Where I played it
right.
two-handed because I was trying to learn it. And I don't even remember what I didn't like about it. But whatever it was, I didn't like it so much that I immediately put it on the shelf for donation. It might have been that it's also a TMG game just like Pioneer Days, which I like a lot. And I expected to like this one more. And I think that maybe it reminded me a little bit of Tumbletown because I believe there are dice in it. Anyways. Whatever I thought it was going to play like, it didn't play like, and I was not impressed. So that one's just, it's already gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't play either of those, so I don't have.
No, I know. You don't have much to say about them. If anything, I saved you from them. I guess it could have turned out that you loved them, but no, you know.
I trust you anyway.
We got enough games. It's fine. And now we are at Game of the Month.
The game I would love to play with the people who I like to play games with the most.
Okay, you're just recategorizing it, I think. I think you're renaming it.
Well, I mean, I'll go back to the box standard categories next week because I see it upsets you, or next month.
I guess it's fine, but it's even worse when you just then be like, well, this is my category for games I'd like to play with loved ones, which is not Game of the Month at all. I thought Game of the Month was like, I think this is the best game I played this month, and it could be because of the specific playthrough or because of the game itself. I think
games that I would have fun playing with you just seem better games to me. So I don't think I'm renaming the category. I'm just to feel a different way about good games.
Let's stop worrying about it.
Bosa.
Oh.
So I don't think you liked it.
I didn't not like it. I lost. I tried very hard. I wondered. I had this different, and we have a different episode where we talk about this and Roland One as coffee shop games.
Yeah.
So we go in depth quite a bit on it there. After we finished, I was questioning what is luck in this game? What is skill in this game? And I ended up having some meta thoughts about family weight games that do things to balance it, that introduce points to balance it. But then when you are like really into gaming, the introduction of those points becomes more predetermined.
Right.
Because the points don't assume that you're going to execute perfectly given your options. And it's pretty close to being able to execute perfectly if it's a lighter weight game and you are a game player who goes all the way into heavyweight games.
Yeah, I would say Bosa, it's a nice like tableau building thing that's also like an engine building thing.
Yeah.
Where as you build your tableau, like the pieces that you've laid stack into the resources that you can, you know, use and the actions you can take. And I think I didn't have a lot of tough decisions, which I think is characteristic of what you're saying. Like if my decisions aren't tough, it's because the points are like the best decision is obvious. I also think I got very lucky.
Yeah, you had a lot of synergy between your goal and the cards that came out and when they come out, which is another kind of inherent part of Bosa. The way you build your tableau, it's not just like I can collect cards whenever that are good for me. They have to be in certain spots.
There are six colors. There's four cards showing up at a time.
Yes.
Colors were very important to my goals.
Yes.
And very often a color that I needed came out in pairs, which meant that as we were alternating through the draft, I could opt to not take it and trust it was coming back to me. And that I think was like, I don't think that kind of luck is going to happen every time.
Right. I that's true. I think it could be different at higher player counts. And I think the production of the game is delightful. I think the art and graphic design like is very cohesive top to bottom throughout the game. It was like a no plastic kind of thing. Everything came wrapped in paper. Like, a lot of things about the production I thought were fantastic.
Yeah.
And I do like the way the game plays. I was curious as to if you remove the goals, does it become more strategic of a game because you don't have these individual ways of getting like these pretty good amount of points?
Right.
There's definitely still more than enough opportunities to get points during the game. This is a game where we both scored around 200.
Right.
So there's a lot of points in the game, but also I think for your end game goals, you scored maybe 50 or more. I scored like
56.
So
I don't know why that's in my brain, but that's,
I think we all know why.
Ten minutes ago, I couldn't remember who won Jekyll and Hyde, but I'm pretty confident that I had 56 in game points.
I think that's great. that's a quarter of your score.
Yeah,
So then it's like 25% of your score being just the in-game part is a good amount.
Yeah.
So yeah, I still like it. I'd still play it again. And I think how you lay out your tableau and therefore execute your engine is just a nice little puzzle. It doesn't have a one-player game version.
Right.
I don't know why. You could pretty easily...
You just score attack it.
You could score attack it and just randomly remove a card with a die roll.
Or only be able to select from two.
That seems sad. Or three, right?
Well, I was trying to make it hard. You said it wasn't that hard.
Listen, for the... this is one of the things I told you when we were playing Flip Town. For combo-tastic roll and write games, there's usually a solo mode because you don't actually need that much interaction. And the points thresholds on like what they tell you is good for solo mode, or you know, they give you little titles, is usually pretty high because they are like... As you're playing this, they, I think, want it to be a challenge. And when you do crack that code of how does it all combo together?
Right.
Yeah, it gets really high. So, yes, solo games sometimes have very hard scoring thresholds, in part because you have this maybe ability to kind of perfect your choices more than you do in a multiplayer game. But I don't need it to be hard for it to be enjoyable. So my game of the month... I am having the hardest time picking and then also trying to decide what is right to pick or not. So I'm going to mention some honorable things as I roll into it. Flip Town, you didn't care for at all. We're going to talk about it on a coffee shop games, which two games we didn't play in a coffee shop for Great Heartland Hauling Company and Flip Town. We'll be in an episode together. You did not like that combo-tastic thing.
Yeah,
and you scored this. I played it solo. We played it then together. I mean, I played solo months ago. We played it then together. Your score was almost exactly the same as my first playthrough solo. So then my second playthrough, I doubled that score just about.
Right.
So you kind of get into all of those types of games. I think you kind of get into the right mode. You understand the balance between what do I need to do first that'll help me fuel into all of these chaining bonus actions. Because you can take a turn that's really more like six turns.
Right.
Yeah. So Flip Town, I do really like, and it's another one where graphic design, the artistic direction, as well as the game itself, top to bottom, all really nice. And it's the only game I think that I have that's like that, that sort of game that comes with dry erase boards instead of coming with a massive stack of sheets.
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of now feel like, okay, wait, why aren't more of them just coming with dry erase boards? I don't know. I'm guessing the cost difference is a lot. Flip Town came through Kickstarter. But in any case, that was one that I considered for game of the month. Soulless Lost was a random pickup at the game store. It's a solo only game. And you are, there's a lot of solo only games where you're in a spaceship and you're trying not to die. And so thematically, it's been done before. It has a style to it, like an art style to it. It's also not super far from other space theme, You're Lost, right. It's very dark games. But I just, it got catchy and I just kept playing it. It was just the right kind of puzzle. I mean, that same thing for Flip Town. It's kind of puzzle where either you like it or you don't. Lacuna was a great two-player, very easy spatial game.
Right.
Really easy to pick up, really easy to play and enjoyable and kind of just nice to look at. So that was one of the ones that came from Barnes & Noble. There's a Shut Up and Sit Down review, I believe, of that one as well. Maybe. I might be misremembering that. And the other runner-up one was Gnar. And I think that's what I picked for Game of the Con.
Yeah, for sure.
For Dice Tower West. It's a nice little Injamila game. And I think between Bosa and Gnar, I think I'm picking Gnar.
Oh, that makes sense for you. Yeah, I think Gnar is better than Bosa, but Bosa's really good. And I think I picked Gnar for the other one, so I didn't want to pick it again.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. So all of those, I think ultimately... are the runners up all kind of fighting on that next rung below what I can't talk about, which is the unpublished prototype.
Oh, are you just okay?
What?
I didn't know you would pick that one.
I didn't know I would pick that one either. And I can't actually talk about it. We're play testing it. But what I can say is that I expected you to like it a lot more than me.
Oh, right.
Part of me participating in it and like helping to pursue that we would be able to do play testing for it was really, I just thought, oh, you'll like it so much. And in our plays, it's not that you haven't liked it that much, but I think there are parts of it that are different than you expect that you found frustrating. And in the same way that I'm talking about, a lot of these have a puzzle to them that I liked. I have, as we've kept playing this one, there's a puzzle that it seems like I've liked it more than you or anyone else that we've played with.
Yeah,
where
I think
I'm open to the particular type of challenge that it is giving you with how the rules and the gameplay go. I think that there are times when you have felt about this game the same way you felt about Flip Town, which was just like, I see that this is a valid thing. I see how that this puzzle does work. The rules that they've given you are cohesive. I get it. And you said about Flip Town, I'd rather be playing Wordle.
Yeah, I just sit with
it's just not the puzzle. I'd rather do a different puzzle.
We'll talk more, of course, in the future about this.
In the future about this, yeah. I know we can't say that much.
I think the thing for me, and because I'm trying to process through, I want to like it. In fact, I do like it, but I think you're right to say that I don't like it as much as you would expect. I think it subverts some pretty, like, it's a style of game that I'm very good at, and then it
is changing.
Requires me to subvert the assumptions I make. So it's not that.
Right.
It's not that it's counterintuitive. I think it's counterintuitive to me in a way it's maybe not counterintuitive to others. And the theme of this game is driving those mechanics so hard that I can't even say they're bad. Like, they're forcing me to think differently in a way that makes me uncomfortable. I think if I play it more, I'll like it more. But it's sort of like,
and I don't know that you will. And I think that's fine. I think, you know, if you think about a game mechanism that you like, and part of there being hundreds of games here with us today, thousands of games in like the Dice Tower West library, so many more than that actually out there, that things do get remixed and reinvented and combined and broken apart into all these different new experiences. Sometimes that is, I think it comes down to each person, how much they like that or not, and where like it leaves off for them. And I think you can say that for every different type of game. Like, different types of games seem to get hot for at different times where everyone's making their own version of it. And I think that if you're already someone who likes that before everyone does 100 remixes of it, sometimes that delusion, that remixing, you're kind of like, you know, I liked this when it was boring to everyone else. Like, I liked the core fundamental of what was happening here. I didn't need all of the extra fluff.
Right.
And I think that's valid. That will be some of the things that we'll see what actually ends up happening with this game. Right. Our thought is that we'll record something in full detail probably soon when we're done playtesting. And then we'll see. We'll just put that on the back burner. We'll see if this game comes out in a form close enough to what we were playing that it's worth talking about.
And then we'll publish it.
And then we'll publish it to kind of dig into this a little deeper. We're keeping it at a very meta level about the meta of board gaming. And I
think I will say about my affinity or not affinity to it, because I think even without talking about it, this is still kind of impactful. It's not that it like, I think we've talked a lot about how like intuitively play games.
Yeah.
And my intuitions are not, they don't work in this game.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, and I feel like I'm strongly correct and I'm not. And I think essentially that makes it a good game, and it makes it a game that I will like more as I adjust my intuition relative to the rule set.
You don't, as we're playing, you don't seem open to adjusting your intuition.
Well, it's, you know, I've been playing these games a long time.
You're
rather
stubborn about your intuitions about certain things. So that would be surprising.
It usually works.
Yeah. And that's where I'm saying, like, I think it's totally fine to be like, you know what? I don't need a new version of this thing. I like the old versions. And I wonder, too, this is another big meta thought about board gaming. We have a lot of games. We've played a lot of games. I buy and get rid of a lot of games. I'm wondering, as we're really settling into that year over year, how much harder is it going to be? I think it's natural. How much harder is it going to be for a new game to come in when really the collection we have, no matter how many games it is, if it's 300 games, is 300 games evaluated against 1,000?
Right.
So it gets harder and harder to like actually slot in there. And
I mean, so, you've thrown away 3 games you bought this month, so.
Because it's sort of like you can kind of play it and know whether there's still dice, there's still cubes, there's still cards. Like, you know, when you boil it all down, the fact that there are this many variations on it is impressive, even when you just are looking at one certain mechanism. So yeah, every new game you play gets evaluated against more and more games that you've played. And I'm wondering, are we at like a kind of certain level, and maybe you specifically with this playtesting game, where it's like, yeah, it's going to be hard to break. Like this is pretty locked in tight about what I like and what I don't like. And even when it's done really well, that's not always going to be the thing anymore. Like there can be something done. Oh, you did a great job over there. Excellent job. You're going to be very successful with this. I'm not buying a copy.
Right.
I think that's...
To be fair, I still want a copy of this game.
We're still getting a copy of this game. Yeah. But again, I'm saying this from a meta perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it got a little deep. Got a little deep for Game of the Month. What do we usually do? Oh, what are we looking forward to? In April, you know, we went to 2 conventions in March. I think we're going to 0 conventions. I think that overall... We do have another house project coming up in April. Kind of took a month off.
Baseball season just started, which is a thing that you don't care about.
But yeah, we did have baseball highlights. 2045 is one of the games, which I know, you know, it didn't end up in that little end, those last 3. Certainly not one of them. But we backed that one. So that one is one that's going to be, they have a new edition. That
I think
just
I
went
picked it
GameStop.
As my game of Dice Tower West. That's why I didn't pick it here.
Or
it was in my top 3 for Dice Tower West.
Yeah. So, you know, there's even baseball board games. I don't think that we're...
I'm looking forward to getting that, but I don't think it's coming in April.
I bet it's coming a little... No, it's not April. I bet it's coming a little faster since it's a reprint kind of thing.
I'm very excited for it.
I hope, but I honestly didn't look at the date. I just was like, yep, apparently this is a thing that's happening. So yeah, I think there's going to be a little more time to... It's going to be less than March. But I think it'll be more than the other months, what we actually get through. And we don't have much on our to play shelf
now. I think because you said you liked it and because you said, like, I forget if it was this episode or the Hoosier Con episode, but I think getting Carvey back to the table is a thing I'm looking forward to. And I think we might do it.
Yeah. And we don't often get big Euro games back to the table right after we play them.
Right.
That just usually doesn't happen. I think that would be good, especially since we rushed the end of that play for months and months and months. And I almost thought about taking it this weekend. I've said, oh, I got to get the Skyrim adventure game played.
Oh.
We went all the way through winter, didn't get the game played.
What you're looking forward to on every episode for the last 7 months.
It's true that I am still looking forward to it, but I feel like it's still going to need to be... It's obvious that it needs to be like a special occasion. And I don't think that's going to happen until maybe next winter. Maybe it's going to be the second half of the year. But that's out there. We still are pretty early in our year ambition of playing every game.
Oh, yeah.
We've played a lot of new games instead. So we'll see. April might be a big month for that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 143. Be sure to subscribe to know when new episodes drop. You can follow us on Instagram, X, and Twitch at Variant Hex. We have a website and a blog at varianthex.com, and you can email us at podcast@varianthex.com. There were so many great games played in March, we could have talked about many more, and a lot of the games we played will be getting their own review episodes, starting next with Roll-in-One and Bosa. Unless you're listening to these in reverse, in which case you have 142 more episodes headed your way,
The next one being Aaron and I recapping our time at a local convention. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today.